Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is Carolyn Nichols, who's an Alexander Technique teacher in Brighton, England. She also runs a teacher training program there. She's been an Alexander teacher for about 30 years, and she trained to become a teacher with a man named Walter Carrington. I had quite a bit of contact with Walter when I was training in England. I was not on his training course. And we're going to talk today a little bit about Walter and about his wife, Dilys Carrington, and just a little bit about their contributions to the Alexander Technique. Carolyn, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Robert. It's really nice to talk to you.
Well, it's good talking to you, too. And I don't think we need to define the Alexander Technique here, because we're going to be talking mainly to teachers, Alexander teachers and students of the technique. Mm-hmm. But Walter, I think it might be best if you maybe talked about your first encounter with Walter. That might be a good place to start. What do you think?
Absolutely, that would be great. Well, my first encounter with Walter was the interview lesson that I had with him in order to be accepted on his training course. I had some lessons with my own teacher, who lived in Forest Gate in the East End of London, and made that momentous decision to train. And I first actually had lessons with his wife, Dilys, mm-hmm. and then she said, oh, you've got to have a lesson with Walter. And so I had my lesson with Walter, and you went into Walter's study. And at that time, Walter was in his middle to late 60s, I would say, when I first met him. And his study was just amazing, because it had got in it all this memorabilia, photographs of Alexander for a start, Alexander on his horse. It had also got in it this little toy donkey with handles you pushed, that was the first model that one of the little girls that they taught used to sit on, because she was having problems with standing and walking and so on. And it was still there after sort of 30 or 40 years. So you had a lot of history in the room. And there's Walter, and he just said to me, come in, my dear, which is pretty much what he said to everyone. And then I sort of came in, and you come in with all these questions you want to ask. And then this big hand descends on the back of your neck, and it just stays there, really, pretty much for the whole lesson. And you forget what you wanted to ask, and you're just fascinated by what's happening in you in response to this stimulus that you get from this man. And I remember so clearly thinking, how is it that his hand feels so soft and so strong at the same time? And he also struck me as very jolly. He was always laughing and smiling, and seemed genuinely pleased to see not just you, but everyone. And over the years I knew him, I came to think that this really was how he was. He just loved meeting people, and he loved working with them, and he really enjoyed getting his hands on people.
Yeah, that kind of matches a little bit my experience. I went to England in the late 70s looking for a training course, and as it turned out, Walter, at that time at least, it was quite a long waiting list to get on his course, but I did have a series of lessons with him. And I can remember that same hand descending on my neck, and my questions seemed to fade away, at least for a while. And the other thing I remember, two things that always struck me about Walter. One was that incredible ability to help calm you down. Mm-hmm. I mean, he really... And he kind of exuded that even on the training course. I visited quite a few times. He had a way of speaking, a kind of a way of being, really, that yeah. led you to think, okay, I can I don't have to tense up right now. You know, I can let go of that just by just being in his presence. And the other thing that just astonished me about him, and I've never seen that with any other teacher, is that sometime, usually a minute or two into the lesson, and his lessons were half-hour lessons, he would start talking about different things. And it wasn't always exactly clear why he was talking about what he was right away, but it would end up being a little coherent lecture almost.
Yeah,
that would end
a story.
Yes, story or whatever, that would end pretty much precisely when the lesson ended. And
oh, yes.
Many years later, I studied NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, for a while, and they're very big on how people convey information in indirect ways and with metaphors and that kind of thing. And looking back on it, I mean, Walter was really the master of that. I know in a previous conversation we've had. You alluded to his ability, I forget the phrase now, like the second, what was that?
First person once removed.
First person once removed. Do you want to say a word or two about that? Because that was Walter as well.
Yes, absolutely. I can give you a nice example of that, really.
Mm-hmm.
When John and I were in Australia, we ran a teacher training program in Melbourne for a three-year period.
Mm-hmm.
And we were really absolutely over the moon when Dillis and Walter said, actually, we're coming out to Australia and we're going to come to your training course and we're going to work with your students, which was just, you know, wonderful, because they were well into their 70s by then. And Walter, as you know, had three hip replacements, I think, by then, maybe mm-hmm. two, maybe mm-hmm. three. And, you know, to make that long flight, we felt we were very privileged. And he worked with our students, whom, of course, he had never, ever met or put his hands on before. And we would listen to him. And with each one of them, he seemed to find a way of telling them some kind of a story or having some kind of observation to make that was completely appropriate to them. I remember he had hands on one of our students who was a sailor. And he didn't know that this chap was not only a sailor, but built his own boats and did all the rigging and all the rest of it. And he was talking about guy ropes, the neck and the roll of the head and how things had got to be all working together in order for things to sail easily. And, you know, afterwards, this chap said to us, well, you told him, didn't you? We said, no, not at all.
Well, that's amazing. Yeah, I can imagine that with Walter, though. He just seemed to be able to tune into your mental state, your mental history, as it were, and so he was absolutely an amazing Alexander teacher on many levels. And I think we're going to talk about Dillis, his wife, in a moment, but before we get to Dillis, I think it's important to say that he was also, apart from being a really wonderful teacher and training course director, he had some pretty interesting innovations in his teaching. And I think I believe it's the case that he's the responsible for the idea of having people sit on a horse saddle, typically, that's raised so that your legs can either be in a stirrup or just be hanging free.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea, as I understood it, was that there are really not very many situations when you are sitting with your legs kind of hanging down. And so it's possible to, without any support or any pressure on them, so it's possible to do some work, some Alexander work, particularly with your hips and legs, but also all of you, in that situation, that can be very usefully carried over into ordinary activity. Do you know about the history of that? I guess it was called saddle work, basically.
Yeah, we tend to call it saddle work.
Yeah.
Well, of course, Walter himself, as you may know, was a keen rider.
Yes.
And had his own horse and was riding pretty much right up into his 80s, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And he kept his horse, he stabled his horse with an Alexander teacher called Danny Pevsner. I don't know if you've heard of him.
I actually went on a little trip that Walter organized one Saturday.
To his,
yes.
Yeah. And, you know, I can remember at one point Danny saying to us the terrible responsibility he now felt for Walter, you know, coming into his 80s. And there he was on top of his horse. And yeah. Danny knew that his life wouldn't be worth living if he ever, you know, let Walter have some kind of an accident,
right.
Which never happened, of course. So Walter was a keen rider. That was, I think, one of the things. And, of course, so was Alexander. Mm-hmm. And being fortunate enough to train with Walter and spend time with both him and Dillis after training, after I'd finished my own training, going back in rather quite a lot, he would talk about being with Alexander, some of the things Alexander said or did. And he did used to occasionally talk about Alexander's connection with horses, not only through his father, who was a blacksmith, but his own training of horses and how much he, Walter, really felt that was something that had contributed to the way he'd worked out what was going on in a human being. And Walter used to use the saddle. He did work on us occasionally on the saddle, and very much as you said, because it's unique. It gives you that unique situation where you're upright, but you're not having to take weight through your legs.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
And what he used to do, he would work with us on the saddle, and he developed this way in particular of taking legs whilst you were sitting on this saddle, on the wooden saddle horse,
mm-hmm.
Which I still use and, in fact, demonstrated to my training course today. And when he'd finished and he'd got us off the saddle, he would get us just to stand still for a second or two and then to walk backwards, because he'd got your back working so differently when he got you on the saddle,
mm-hmm.
that he would take you off and get you walking backwards so you wouldn't lose that new coordination that you got.
Right, so you wouldn't slip into your habitual way
of
walking.
You wouldn't slip into your habit. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, amazing, yeah. And I was going to say that two things. Walter, of course, Walter and Alexander were both riders. Mm-hmm. And you know who else was an avid rider? It was Marjorie Barstow.
Oh, right. Okay.
And again, into her,
she would be
well up into her 80s.
Yeah,
and she
absolutely
would just hop on the horse and take off. It was a different kind of riding maybe than Walter did. It was more, you know, it was on a ranch, in a ranch situation. And I wonder if I had heard, and I don't know if there's any documentation of this or not, but I had heard that the very term use that Alexander teachers like to use originates from the language of Australian horse trainers in the 19th century. Have you ever hear that or know anything more concrete about that?
I don't know anything more concrete about that, but that does make sense to me.
Mm. But I think it is true that riding and horses, I think that's influenced the Alexander technique in a lot of ways that maybe most of us don't realize today.
I would agree with that, yeah.
So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about Dillis Carrington, his wife. My experience with her is pretty limited. I had a couple of table turns with her, but I didn't know her all that well. But I know from talking to people who were on his training course that she was a pretty powerful influence in the teaching there.
She was, and particularly in the period that I trained, which was 1979 to 81, mm-hmm. Dilys was really getting into her stride. And what she particularly excelled at and loved, and her big contribution, was what she did in helping people to learn the skills of using their hands on other people. What we call it hands-on groups. When in my training course, I call them hands-on groups, and it's a piece of time in the training course that's devoted to that skill of using your hands on somebody else. Of course, it's integrated with other skills. Of course it is. But Dilys was the person who began to realize that when people came on the training course, in her opinion, they didn't really know how to direct properly. They didn't really understand it, not in the way she felt that they should. And that was such a necessary precursor to using your hands on somebody else, that she set out a whole series of hands-on groups, hands-on procedures, if you like, that week by week, or lesson by lesson, session by session, built up the skills that are fundamental to good use in teaching other people. I, in fact, documented that when I was training with her, because I was so taken with it. And I gave it this very grandiose title. I called it Notes Towards a Method of Training Alexander Teachers, an Observation of Dilys Carrington.
Sounds like a 19th century pamphlet.
Well, you know what? It was kind of, it was a bit like that.
Yeah.
And that became a foundation document that a lot of people used, including a lot of Americans, because Americans used to come over an awful lot, as you know.
Oh, yes.
As a kind of template for the first year of a training course, because I documented exactly what she did. I stayed with her for a year as her apprentice, and I was the first one. So it's quite a unique experience, and I feel very fortunate to have had it, where I said to her, Dilys, you've got to show me how you do this, because she was really keen on it. And the other thing that she and I had in common was textiles, because my first degree is in textiles and embroidery, mm-hmm. and Dilys was really, really a very keen tapestry maker.
Oh, I had no idea.
Oh, she made these incredible tapestries. She was, it was something that she delighted in. She was very good at it. And I used to, when she'd finished them, I would stretch them out for her, because that's actually quite a skill to stretch them out so you don't distort these things before you put them on your lovely Victorian or Edwardian chairs, you know?
Right.
So we had that skill in common as well, that interest in common. And I said, look, I really want to know what it is you're doing. And so she said, oh, that would be lovely. So she made me come to her hands-on groups, and I followed this one group of new students through their whole first year, and I documented every single hands-on group that she did with them. And she made me observe by putting my hand on their back whilst she was teaching them how to use themselves better. And it was fascinating, because at the beginning, she'd look at me and she'd say, there you are. Can you feel that? Did you get that? And I'd look at her and I'd say, no. But after a while, I knew what she was talking about. I could feel what she was talking about. And she'd just sort of raise an eyebrow at me and I'd go, yeah. And then the pupil would feel it. And then the person on the end of that pupil's hands, they'd also feel it. And it reminded me so much of a hose pipe filling with water. And if you've got, you know, you've got your foot on the hose pipe, you start to feel the water coming through, and mm-hmm. you sense, oh, the hose pipe's coming alive. And it just fascinated me. And Dilys really, really refined this to a very, very high level. And I think that was an amazing contribution that she made to the Alexander world, that not necessarily everyone knows about.
So pamphlet that you wrote, is that something that is available for Alexander teachers today?
Yes, it is. I've
can they go to your can they go to your website and email you? And
yeah, they can,
because we'll be putting a link to your site by this interview. So Because you and I, I don't think I ever met you in London, but we were there at pretty much the same time. And having listened to what you just said about Dilys's work with that, I think that she must have had quite an influence on Paul and Betty Collins
Oh, she did.
because one of the things that really struck me starting the training course with them was how they kind of, you might say, how they taught how to use your hands as a teacher. And I believe they probably use some of those same procedures.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure they did, listening to what you're saying. And so I guess I also have indirectly benefited from Dilys's teaching. Is there anything else you'd like to say about Dilys or about Walter?
Only that I feel they gave a great contribution to the Alexander work, and they trained a lot of people, and some of those people carrying that work forward, training others. And I just feel it's a very valuable contribution. And one of my direct contemporaries is Ron Collier, who runs a training course in the Reading area. And he and I were talking about how we now feel at our age. We're both, Ron and I, are in our 60s now, and how we both feel we have a weight of responsibility, really, the Alexander world, to try and articulate this work and try to shed what light we can on what we've learnt over the years and how that learning has unfolded. Because I still feel literally Walter's hands on my neck and Dilys's hands on my ribs, and it's like a neurological memory that I continue to mine for more and more information. I can always go back there, and I think that's something that I value hugely.
Yeah, I very much value, even though I ended up being kind of more influenced by Marjorie Barstow than anyone else, I never felt any temptation to, say, drop out of the training course in London. I felt that I was learning a tremendous amount there, and it was all kind of indirectly from Walter Carrington. And so, as far as I'm concerned, he was a huge influence on me. And I think, he re his teaching, his and Dilys's teaching, certainly represent, I would guess, one of the, probably the major or one of the two major traditional teaching strands of Alexander teaching today.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know all the ins and outs of what's going on in England these days, but certainly, I mean, he really had a huge influence on how the work progressed after Alexander died.
Well, of
So.
course, I'm sure you know that he was essentially running Alexander's
Oh,
course
yes, yeah.
when
He,
Alexander was, very old
in the
man.
very, in the, in Alexander, Alexander, just for the historical record here, I had a stroke, I believe, around 1949. And while he recovered from it to a large extent and continued teaching, I think a lot of his training course teaching and a lot of his private work was being handled by Walter
That's right.
in those last years. Yeah, so Walter is really and Dilys are really important figures in the Alexander development of the Alexander technique that we all enjoy today. Well, unless there's anything else you'd like to add, this might be a place to bring our conversation to an end. What do you think?
Oh, just one small
Sure,
point.
yeah.
Thinking about that period of time of Walter and Alexander, Goddard Binkley's diary, The Expanding Self, really illustrates that period really very nicely. So if you wanted to read about that period, you can do no better than actually read Goddard Binkley.
Right. And just for our listeners, Goddard Binkley was an American Alexander teacher based, I believe, in Chicago, and he spent a fair amount of time in England, I believe, around 1952 or 53 in that area. And among other things, he has quite a detailed account of his lessons with Alexander. And I guess he mentions Walter quite a bit, too. It's been a while since I've read it.
But he does. When he comes to recording his experiences on the training course, that's where you see how much he's doing with Walter.
So his book is called The Expanding Self. It's probably available through, I would guess, through STAT and maybe through AMSAT. It's not exactly a commercial book, but it is a very interesting book to read, particularly the Alexander portion of it. It's really kind of an autobiographical piece in general. You know, one other thing that I think would be useful to add, you mentioned Walter having two or three hip replacements, and it wasn't because Walter misused his body and wore his hip sockets out. Walter was a gunner in the RAF. I believe
That's
he was
right.
a gunner,
That's
right?
right? In he was the a pathfinder pilot.
Yeah, during World War II, and his plane crash landed behind
the
enemy
lines. Yeah, so he wasn't the gunner, he was the pilot.
He was the pilot. Okay, I didn't know that.
He was the pilot, yeah. And when his plane, I mean, this last little fact that I can tell you, I only found out actually at Walter's funeral, which was that when his plane was hit, the normal procedure would be for everyone to bail out then. Mm-hmm. And Walter didn't do that. He felt he got the best chance of survival for him and his crew if he carried on flying as long as he could to get lower and lower to the ground before they evacuated. And that's what he did. And they landed in Czechoslovakia. And Walter fractured his pelvis.
Mm-hmm.
And Walter landed in an area. I don't know precisely where it was, but the other members of his crew were all Poles, I think. Mm-hmm. And he was picked up broken pelvis in a pretty bad state. And then as the war was coming closer and closer, Walter had to walk across enemy lines disguised as a Jesuit priest.
Oh, I didn't
know
that.
And he walked. Yeah, I know. It's fascinating, isn't it?
Oh,
and he walked
great.
On a broken hip, hopefully using his knowledge of the Alexander's technique because he was trained by then. In this disguise as a Jesuit priest across enemy lines. Isn't that amazing?
I didn't know anything about that. I had heard that Walter at one time contemplated becoming a priest. Is that correct?
That's right. That's
okay,
right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's fascinating. And if you were to, during the time I knew him, which was late 70s and into the 80s, if you would see Walter walking... He did have a kind of a limp because of those injuries, but I gotta say it was the most graceful limp I've ever seen. I mean, he seemed to kind of float across the floor. Do you remember that? Is that your impression?
Yeah. And he
wasn't exactly walking the way most people walk. There was this limp, but it was incredibly light and graceful. So he obviously did a lot of Alexander thinking and self-directing.
Well, I do remember at some point in my training, Walter had just had his second or his third hip, I don't know which one it was, mm-hmm. and him demonstrating monkey to the whole class with his new hip.
Yeah.
And we were all just gobsmacked, is the phrase I would use.
Yeah.
At the freedom, the intelligence, as you say, the grace of the man when he moved.
He was, I would say he was an incredibly graceful person in general. Would you agree with that? Not just on a physical level, but just the way he spoke to people, the way he related to people. He was an incredibly graceful man.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is a good point to bring our conversation to an end. My mm-hmm. guest has been Carolyn Nichols, who has been teaching the technique for about 30 years in Brighton, England. She runs a training course there. She studied with Walter Carrington and with Dilys Carrington in the late 70s and early 80s. And if you will put a link to her website, if you want to inquire about the little pamphlet she mentioned, you could email her from her website and find out about that. Carolyn, thank you so much for being on the show.
You're very welcome. Thank you for asking me.